Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, China and Environmental History, by Robert B. Marx is a broad synthetic work of environmental history that traces the relationship between human communities and the natural world in China from prehistoric settlement to the present. Written for students, scholars, and informed general readers, the book belongs to the World Social Change series and treats environment not as a background setting but as a central force in historical development. Marx examines agriculture, forests, rivers, climate, population growth, state power, frontier expansion, industrialization, and modern policy to show how Chinese society reshaped landscapes while also being constrained by them. The book is especially concerned with the long historical roots of current ecological crises, including soil depletion, deforestation, flooding, pollution, and resource pressure. Its purpose is not simply to catalog damage, but to explain how productive and durable systems could also generate cumulative environmental costs. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, human settlement and agriculture as engines of environmental transformation. A central concern of the book is the shift from early human settlement to intensive agriculture, and the ways this transition altered Chinese landscapes over millennia. Marx presents agriculture not only as a source of food and social complexity, but also as a mechanism of ecological change. Clearing forests, draining wetlands, building irrigation works, and converting diverse habitats into fields allowed expanding populations to survive, yet these same practices reduced biodiversity, changed water flows, and increased vulnerability to erosion and flooding. The point is not that farming was simply destructive. Chinese agricultural systems were often highly productive, adaptive, and capable of sustaining dense populations for long periods. The important insight is that productivity and sustainability are not identical categories. A system can remain socially successful while imposing cumulative environmental costs. By starting with settlement patterns and agrarian development, Marx shows that environmental history cannot be separated from ordinary subsistence decisions. The cultivation of millet, rice, and other crops was also a process of remaking soils, forests, wetlands, and river systems. Secondly, state power, war, and infrastructure-shaped rivers and farmland, Marx gives significant attention to the role of states, warfare, taxation, and infrastructure in environmental change. Chinese regimes did not merely govern people. They mobilized labor, directed settlement, built hydraulic works, expanded farmland, and attempted to stabilize unpredictable landscapes. Dikes, canals, irrigation networks, and river management projects were essential to political authority because they supported transport, taxation, military logistics, and food security. These interventions could reduce some risks while producing others. Efforts to control rivers sometimes shifted flooding downstream, intensified siltation, or encouraged settlement in hazardous areas that later required further state intervention. The book therefore treats environmental management as a political process rather than a purely technical one. War and state expansion also transformed land use by driving migrations, opening new agricultural zones, and increasing demand for timber, grain, and transport routes. Marx emphasizes that environmental problems often emerged from successful governance as much as from neglect. Large states created the capacity to modify ecosystems at scale, but that same capacity could magnify unintended ecological consequences. Thirdly, North China deforestation and southward expansion reveal regional contrasts. The book highlights the uneven geography of Chinese environmental history, especially the contrast between northern regions, long associated with early states and agriculture, and southern regions that were gradually colonized and incorporated. In the north, long-term farming, urbanization, fuel demand, and construction contributed to deforestation and soil stress. On the loose landscapes and river plains, erosion and sediment movement became persistent problems, linking land use to flooding and river instability. The south, by contrast, was not simply an untouched frontier waiting for cultivation. It contained varied ecologies, including forests, wetlands, river valleys, and non-hand communities with their own forms of land use. As imperial expansion and migration pushed southward, new forms of rice agriculture, commercial cropping, and settlement transformed these environments. Marx uses these regional differences to challenge any single national environmental story. China was not one ecological unit moving through a uniform sequence of change. Its history involved shifting frontiers, different climate zones, varied soils, and changing relationships between core regions and peripheries. This regional approach makes environmental change more concrete and historically specific. Fourthly, late imperial growth exposed tensions between resilience and degradation. Marx pays close attention to late imperial China because it reveals the paradox at the center of the book. During this period, population growth, market expansion, commercial agriculture, and internal migration helped produce one of the most sophisticated agrarian societies in the world. Farmers used fertilizers, crop rotations, irrigation, terracing, and labor-intensive techniques to sustain high yields. These practices demonstrate remarkable ecological knowledge and social organization, yet the same period also intensified pressure on forests, hillsides, lakes, wetlands, and marginal lands. And more people required more fuel, food, building materials, and cultivated acreage, leading to expanded settlement in fragile environments. The tension is that late imperial agriculture could appear sustainable because it supported dense populations for centuries. But it often did so by transferring pressure across regions and by gradually narrowing ecological margins. Marx therefore avoids both romantic celebration and simple condemnation. He presents Chinese agrarian history as a case of resilience combined with accumulated vulnerability, showing how long-term success can conceal growing environmental fragility until floods, famine, resource shortages, or political stress expose it. Lastly, modern industrialization turned historical pressures into global concerns. The modern chapters connect earlier patterns of environmental pressure with the disruptions of industrialization, revolution, development planning, and contemporary economic growth. Marx treats modern China not as a complete break from the past, but as an acceleration of older dynamics under new technological and political conditions. Population pressure, land scarcity, river control, and resource extraction had deep histories, but the scale of coal use, industrial pollution, chemical inputs, dam construction, urban expansion, and manufacturing changed the stakes. The modern state possessed far greater capacity to reorganize landscapes, relocate labor, build infrastructure, and pursue growth targets. This produced impressive economic development, while also generating air and water pollution, habitat loss, soil contamination, and major public health concerns. The book places these problems in global perspective because China is deeply tied to international consumption, energy use, and climate change. Marx therefore resists treating Chinese environmental crisis as an isolated national failure. Modern ecological stress reflects the interaction of domestic history, state development priorities, world markets, and the broader environmental costs of industrial modernity. In conclusion, China and Environmental History is best suited for readers who want a historically grounded explanation of contemporary environmental challenges rather than a narrow account of recent pollution or policy failure. Students of Chinese history, environmental history, Asian studies, world history, and development studies will benefit from its broad chronology and clear synthesis. General readers with interest in climate, agriculture, state power, or global environmental futures can also read it profitably. Especially because Marx explains technical issues through historical processes rather than specialist jargon. The main intellectual benefit is perspective. The book shows that current crises are not accidental or entirely new, but are linked to long patterns of settlement production, governance, and ecological adaptation. Its practical value lies in encouraging readers to examine the hidden costs of systems that appear durable or efficient. Compared with many books on China and the environment, it stands out for combining prehistoric, imperial, modern, and contemporary periods in one coherent framework. It also differs from works focused only on policy or activism by showing how environmental outcomes emerge from ordinary farming, migration, infrastructure, trade, and state formation. Marx offers a balanced account that recognizes Chinese ingenuity and resilience while taking ecological degradation seriously. If you would like to support Robert B. Marx, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.